Howdy, folks. Welcome to Systems, Symbiosis, and the Forest Goddess. My name is Jim Cranford. In the last episode, I said that the battle between science and religion was staged. It's like politics. Once you get above the bickering parties, you find the same interests controlling all sides through their family connections, political contributions, and outright bribes. Elections are a complete farce. The winning candidate is always under somebody's thumb. Well, politics is a dirty business, wherein the scum rises to the top. Our elected officials are generally the most convincing liars. Enough already. What does politics have to do with our subject? Well, everything really is connected, and a little farther down the road you'll be able to see the connection quite clearly, I think. All right, this is episode 4, and I still haven't defined what I'm calling the Forest Goddess. I did point out in episode 1 that she is all about communication, and that our goosebumps show that our subconscious understands her language. I call her a she because she nurtures, like a womb. However, the Forest Goddess is not a single entity, or even a thing. She is a process. She is action. A flow of purposeful energy, building, supplying, and maintaining an extraordinarily efficient community. The forest intends to continue the process of building more forest. Its forest goddess is made up of a network of entities that pass information back and forth, or round and round, actually. It is like our internet, not just the physical network, but the intelligent nodes that sit at every keyboard. Every cell in the forest is an intelligent node that is connected to every other cell by a nearly infinite web of flowing information. These nodes communicate, sharing events, and make choices. On one level, all things are connected in real time. This is the primary perception discovered by Cleve Baxter in his experiments of dumping brine shrimp into boiling water and recording plant reactions. Trauma disturbs the local field, which reverberates throughout the system. This wave triggers feedback, both local and non-local, that carries corrective information. As an example, we can look at John Carnes' experiments with lactose-intolerant strains of E. coli. Normally, E. coli can handle lactose just fine, but this strain had a defective gene, preventing assimilation. He put them in petri dishes with nothing but lactose to eat. They faltered at first, but soon began feeding on the lactose. The bacteria had repaired their own DNA. They had done so without reproduction or any kind of random mutation. The starving cells agitated the system, requesting a solution to their dilemma. They certainly had some sort of interaction with the lactose, trying different modifications of their own genes until they solved the problem. That's the key there. They solved the problem. Bruce Lipton's experiments with stem cells show the same kind of response to the environment. He put stem cells in a petri dish with calcium and the cells made bone. He put them in protein and they made muscle. The point here is that evolution is not confined to reproduction, natural selection, and or random mutation. It takes place in real time. Adaptation to the environment is fundamental to cellular activity. Do you have any idea how this changes evolutionary theory? Okay, I posted this the other day as an article called Psychic Cells Communicate Across Physical Barriers. Mainstream science wants to pretend that these experiments have never taken place. But more and more evidence proves that communication is fundamental and not a human invention. This is the spirit world described by shamans from around the world, from every indigenous culture. These folks are the experts on consciousness and access to the spirit world. The descriptions of what it is and how it works are consistent around the globe and throughout history. During that same time frame, science has changed its mind about just about everything, several times. So who's got the staying power here? Science admits its ignorance in these matters while giving out degrees in both consciousness and shamanic studies. They claim the high ground, making themselves out as authorities in the fields they admittedly know nothing about. Scientists seem to be blind to such blatant arrogance. I guess that's what makes Sheldon Cooper such a funny character. Well, what is the spirit world? You know exactly what it is. You deal with it all the time. Your consciousness is your personal slice of the spirit world. Images and thoughts about the physical world. It is where objects are no longer solid, but virtual representations that you could play with. It is your own virtual reality where you and your imagination can modify and test ideas, concepts, and plans before applying them in real life. It is a world of pure information. That's what the spirit world is, pure information about the physical universe. Consciousness is your account in this universal communications network. It is what we use to interface with both the physical and spirit worlds. This spirit world is like a database, archive, and live feed of flowing information that you can access. Don't believe it? Okay by me. Not everyone is meant to get this. In fact, throughout most of history, passing this information around could get you killed. I wouldn't want to get you in any trouble. The reason science doesn't want you to know about this spirit world is that they have replaced it as your guidance system. In the forest system, our ancestors were guided by the plants they ate, by way of internal communications. Today, it is our culture that guides us with external communications. Well, you don't talk to the forest goddess like you can't talk to the internet. However, there are many entities that make use of the Forest Goddess Network for communication. Some of them will be glad to talk to you. Most plants speak softly, and then mostly to your subconscious and the microbes in your gut. However, there are plants that blast your senses with foreign forms, sounds, colors. Hallucinations, science calls them. But the shaman knows them as powerful plant spirits. These plant spirits are for real. Hallucinations are awe-inspiring for a reason. For those of you who don't know the basics of brainwashing, the system goes as follows. 1. You move subject to new environment. 2. Prevent the subject from using their habitual routines. 3. Introduce trauma and or stress. 4. Require the performance of new duties related to the desired behavior. This routine has been used effectively to reprogram ordinary citizens into soldiers for centuries. The success of this kind of brainwashing is extremely high. Even as influential as post-hypnotic suggestion appears to be, it seems difficult to get someone to do something against their will, like murder. However, citizen soldiers have been murdering, by the millions, like zombies. The system really does work. This is another example of a technique that seems to have been invented by human beings, when in reality these plant spirits have been using this process all along. First, the hallucination takes the subject to a new environment, and usually that subject is immobilized. The subject can't perform any of its normal routines. The next step, the subject is threatened with death or worse. And fourth, the subject is given duties to perform. This simple four-step process is the hallmark of initiations, religious services, and modern advertising. Okay, we have a bright red mushroom growing under a towering conifer. The mushroom is the fruit of a fungus that is bound to the root of the tree and furnishes its nutrition. Along comes one of our ancestors who gobbles up this powerful fruit. Within a few minutes, he starts to feel funny. Not funny ha-ha, but funny peculiar. In the next few hours, our hapless human will be transported to hell and back. The fungus puts the human through a hyper-brainwashing session, pushing all the right buttons to set up a loyal, symbiotic partner. Claiming to be an all-powerful god, who can't bestow fame and fortune on his subjects, the fungus dazzles the newbie with views of faraway places and future events. The subject thinks he or she has died and gone to heaven. This fantastic world is what awaits us after death. But the option is given to return to the world of the living and help others gain this wonderful knowledge. Almost everyone agrees to come back to help others. When the effect wears off, the subject is left a simple directive. Tell the world about this experience. In other words, preach the gospel. Oh yeah, and come back and eat some more. Of course, the subject returns and eats more. Maybe not as much as the first time. As the relationship progresses, the human finds that the information given by this God checks out. This God teaches things like how to build fire, make tools, and hunt. As I mentioned before, the forest already has a directive in place to go out and bring back energy. Like the fungus raised by the leafcutter ants, this fungus sent out its partners to find food and bring it back to eat. Whereas the ants bring the food back to the nest, the amanita calls for the food to be brought back as offering to the tree. This is the very beginning of the concept of animal sacrifice and an altar. The humans brought the animal to the tree where it was slaughtered. The blood soaked into the ground, fed the fungus and the tree, while the humans were fed by the carcass. This was the first God and the beginning of religion. There are several concepts and behaviors we can trace back to this symbiotic relationship. One is social organization. Just as the fungus did with the leaf cutters, the Amanita organized their humans into a strict hierarchical caste system with royalty, servants, workers, and soldiers. Besides the go-out-and-find-food-and-bring-it-home routine, the other primary motivation is to seek heaven, paradise in the stars. This works with the hierarchy to keep us climbing up, to get higher within the competition, to seek penthouse suites, and so forth. Such social climbing is still very much with us today. And so is the more concrete expression of seeking heaven, space exploration. You can see what I'm describing here is a very clever deceit carried out by a very intelligent entity. Most folks are never going to believe that fungi are intelligent. That just goes to show you how affecting their scam has been. I guarantee that fungi are intelligent and fully capable of conning human beings into self-destructive action. I can tell you how to prove it to yourself beyond a shadow of a doubt. However, the proof is not without its own inherent risk, so I don't pass this information out to just anybody. There are some other behaviors encouraged by the Amanita that seem counterproductive at first, like the aforementioned use of fire. Fire is the enemy of the forest, especially when already shrinking. Another behavior that seems destined to cut off the tribe from the forest is the act of cutting down these sacred trees for lodge poles, yule logs, and things like that. And so began the destruction of the forests that we see is still going on today. It was just a matter of time until these forest primates forced themselves out onto the savanna. As these humans cut down, burned, and otherwise abused their forest home, they also cut down their access to their god. Without host trees, the Amanita doesn't fruit. So very early in this relationship, the concept of God became an abstract idea rather than a real experience. So we have a branching point. Tribes are forced into new territory in competition with other tribes in the same fix. There are two scenarios that the tribe can take. They can build themselves a forest-like permanent shelter so they can continue to bring food to a home, or they can follow the herds of game animals, dragging their home along with them. Okay, that's going to do it for today. Next time I'll talk about these two tribal branches and how they separated and recombined into nomads and city-states. Thanks for tuning in, and hope to see you again next time.